But I'd like to start by saying that all teaching proper for saints, maybe the way to say it is all godly instruction, is centered first on the change that the Savior makes in our lives. It's like the Lord does something within His people, and then we learn how to use it. It's like our natural bodies. The Lord gives you a mind, but He doesn't make you learn to be a scientist or a farmer. You have to use the mind that He gave you. He gave us salvation, but He gave us, and it's a good plan. I'm glad He gave us opportunity to do it. You have to learn, and I have to learn, how to use salvation to help others and to help ourselves. Salvation will make our lives beautiful. Skilled salvation makes our lives very beautiful. In the past, I've talked about this subject a little bit by describing the various aspects of grief, but I'd rather go about it a different way this morning and talk about a case history. And offer a scripture to back up what I've said so far. It's in the book of Psalms, 111, in verses 7 through 10. It reads this way. The works of His hands are verity and judgment. All His commandments are sure. They stand fast forever and ever, and are done in truth and uprightness. He sent redemption unto His people. He hath commanded His covenant forever. Holy and reverend is His name. And this, most important for my purpose this morning, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do His commandments. His praise endureth forever. So the fountain from which godly help to one another always comes begins with the fear of the Lord. And that's the change that He makes in our lives. And we use that then to be a blessing to others. So let me give you my story. It begins in Batesville, Arkansas. Batesville, Arkansas is about 230 miles from here. If you drove down through Harrison, you'd be about halfway. It's south and east of us. It's a little bit north of Searcy, Arkansas. There's family there. Mike and Bobby Lowe had two daughters. One was named Allison, and one was named Sarah, the youngest. Mike built a lime business, like farmers put on their fields. He was successful at it. He's an intelligent man. He's a good businessman. And developed his business to the point where he had about 25 employees working for him. And that meant that he had money and he had some leisure time. Mike was a pilot. He loved to fly. Flew everywhere. Flew almost as much as he drove. Anywhere they went. Allison, being the oldest child, maybe, kind of a steady girl, grew up, went to college, got to be a school teacher, got a degree, teaching now in Bentonville, Arkansas, just not too far down the road from where we are this morning. Sarah was a very high-spirited girl. She ran track in high school, and she was very competitive and athletic, and she was good at track. Seemed like she had stardust on her shoulders. Straight A student. Made friends easily. Had lots of friends. Everybody liked her. Cheerleader. First in everything she did. Graduated from Batesville High with honors in 1991. Went on to college. Actually got two degrees and got advanced education beyond that. And could have made either one of those her field of choice. But she inherited something from her daddy. She liked to fly too. So she got involved in flying. she had to start on the edges like people sometimes do for where she wanted to go. But she got a job with American Airlines and worked different places with them, but finally was able, through perseverance, through her natural abilities, to get a job as a flight attendant. That's what she wanted to do. And she also had the lure of the big city lights in her eyes. So she moved from Batesville off to Boston eventually. And she had a dream. She liked to run along the Charles River there to keep her body in condition. And she liked to the bright lights and the things that go with big city living. I know you folks in Neosho don't think much of big city living, but it can be a very, very pleasant experience. There are opportunities there that are not in a small town in the same way that there are opportunities in a small town. Anyway, that's what she wanted to do. And she flew, like the flight attendants do, frequently out of Boston to other places. She wanted an apartment in Beacon Hill, which is one of the finer areas of Boston. But don't typically rent to flight attendants in Beacon Hill because they move too often. But she persevered. So I'll stay here, I'll pay the rent, and so forth. And finally, she succeeded. Got her apartment. Dad and mother went up to help her get it ready. Flew up there. They could afford to do it. Had a wood fireplace in it and other things that, you know, that's more expensive than housing in Neosho. And to get one with a wood fireplace, it's cost something. She got that. And was just ready to move into it. Need a little extra money to help pay the initial lease. And so she volunteered to work an extra day. And you probably figured out where I'm going with this. She volunteered for flight 12, she thought it was, Boston to Los Angeles. But it actually turned out to be flight 11. Flight 11 was the flight that hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center. And she lost her life that day. Now, her case is remarkable. It got the attention of the whole world. But the trauma that her family suffered is not more severe than probably every one of us will suffer one way or another in our lifetime. So that's why what happened in her case can be relevant to what we have to face. And events like that change people's lives forever. Her father said, "When we raised this girl, we never anticipated the road that she would lead us down after she was gone." And you'll find that's true in life. I remember when I was young, I made my plans for my life. Now I'm old and it hasn't been much, I often say, like I thought it would be. Because other people, living and dead, have led me down roads. And they will you too. That I never thought, never wanted to go down. Because that's life. So it's relevant. So she volunteered for flight 11. And there were some things that happened along the way. After the attack by the terrorists on American Airlines flight 11, there were 11 flight attendants. There were 11 crew members on the flight that day, two pilots and a purser. The rest were flight attendants. She was a flight attendant in the forward class, what do they call it, the upper class, first class section. When the attack occurred, she made contact with another flight attendant at the rear of the plane and gave her her credit card so this other girl could use the airphone. And they called American Airlines six times to report events that were taking place on the plane. No one knows that Sarah herself called. There were unidentified voices that tried to call with cell phones, and nobody knows whether or not it was her. But what the other flight attendant reported that Sarah had told her was she had to leave the first class section because there was tear gas being used there. She said more than one person, passengers, were stabbed already. There were flight attendants who were stabbed, and they reported that both of the pilots had been murdered, and it could not get through the cockpit doors up into the front of the airplane. So she's considered for those actions to be a hero of 9/11. And then, of course, the airplane hit the tower. And the news was everywhere. Of course, immediately. Her father, Mike Lowe, and Bobby were in Boston when this happened, or in the vicinity of Boston. And they did what you would do. They called American Airlines. Is my girl on that plane? And I would like to make the point here in my talk about grief that when something like this happens, there are almost always major unanswered questions. It just goes with it. Events that cannot be explained. Things that make you look at it and say, what I know happened couldn't have happened the way that I thought it. I'll step aside from my story just a minute and say after the attacks occurred, years after, Someone sent me an email, and it had a picture of the tower falling down, and it had various lights going off in the tower here and there. And the purpose of the message was to say that this was all planned by George Bush, that there were explosives set in the building, and when the airplane hit it, simultaneously somebody triggered off the explosives, and here's all the lights that show how this happened. I think it was probably electrical wires breaking. I don't believe in the conspiracy theories. But my point is, when there is a tragedy, almost always some questions, and they can torment your mind endlessly because there's so much pain attached to the thing that has taken place. In places like that, there is a consolation that only the Lord can give. And when that happens, we're badly in need of such a consolation, I mean to say. I'm thinking of Proverbs 3 and 5, which puts it this way. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. When we run into those places where we have questions that we cannot answer, the only healing may be in just trusting this into God's hands. Give your children, your loved ones, to the Lord now. Surround them with the arms of prayer. And when the time comes that you're faced with a thing you never wanted to face, you can take comfort in that it could not have happened had God not permitted it. But here's one of the unanswered questions that Mike and Bobby had to deal with. They called American Airlines, and American Airlines attendant, staff member, whoever took their call, read through the manifest list of passengers who were on the flight, and they said, there's no Sarah Lowe on this. So your daughter was not on that plane. They said, good. Everybody's relieved. Several hours went by. Any flight she could have been on had long since landed. No phone call. And they knew that was not like Sarah because she knew, everybody knew what had happened. Because they called back again and said, Sarah hasn't called us. And someone said, oh, I'm sorry, we didn't read the flight attendants who were on the plane. We only read the passengers. And sure enough, her name was among those who were on it. Well, Mike said, I'm going to Bentonville. That's where Allison is. She needs us now. And he went to the airport. Now, here's another point that I want to make. When you get into a situation like that, none of us are an island, folks. We need other people. Every one of us can be hit so hard, we lose our bearings and our perspective. Mike Lowe is an intelligent man. Had he not been, he never could have built a business with 25 employees and sustained it as long as he did. But when you're hit that hard, you lose your compass. You lose your bearings. He said, I'm going to fly. His friend said, he had a friend there with him who came because they heard of the tragedy. And he said, Mike, you can't do that. He said, you're in no condition to fly. Have you ever done that? I've done that. I've told people when we had news like that, don't drive. Let somebody, if you got to go somewhere, let somebody else drive for you. I've seen folks start off on a 12-hour trip after receiving news of an unexpected death and you just shudder. They're not thinking rationally and need somebody to help them. Mike said, I'm going. I don't care what happens. That's my girl. I'm going to comfort her. You get out of my way. And his friend, the Bible said, faithful are the wounds of a friend. We need friends. The Bible said two are better than one. And it said a threefold cord is not easily broken. The smartest man in the world can have his wisdom overcome by four other smart men who work together and put their ideas together. We need each other, folks. I am so glad for the relationships of God's people. And I'm not interested in doing anything to breach those relationships. We need each other. We need each other. At any rate, Mike said, I'm going. His friend said, all right, if I can't talk you out of it, I'm trying to wound you out of it. I'm trying to tell you it's not wise. I'm trying to offer, but if you're going to go, then at least let me go with you. He said, all right, get in that airplane. And we're going. And he took off. And as soon as they came in range of those airplanes all stay in touch with the ground all the way that they're flying. And as soon as they came in range, and got in touch with the closest air traffic controllers. They told him, sir, turn around and land at the closest airport. Now, it's not wise to disobey an air traffic controller if you got a pilot's license, because the penalties can range from losing the right to fly forever to actual prison time. But Mike's on a mission. He's going to go anyway. If it costs me my license, so be it. If I have to go, so be it. I'm going to see my girl. It's not a rational decision. A few hours difference would not really have made a big difference in the rest of his daughter's life. I know, I was in Baltimore when 9/11 occurred, and I remember driving by one of the biggest airports in the United States, and it was an eerie feeling to see all those airliners quiet and still on the ground and no life or activity anywhere in the airport. I remember I had a dollar rent a car, and dollar when I called them and said, drive your car to wherever you need to go. Don't worry about the charges. And I felt very American that day. But Mike was in the air. And he told the air traffic controller, I'm going to Bentonville, Arkansas. And the air traffic controller told him, sir, you will be shot down if you continue. We've ordered every airplane on the ground. And his friend said, Mike, this is it. And he turned around and went back. Because there are things bigger than your grief and mine. When you're in a severe grief, you feel like this is the worst that could ever happen to anybody. But the truth is, folks, if you look around you at the gray heads, you're looking at people everywhere that have been through something just like it. One way or another. Something like this is not the only kind of grief that there is in the world. There's grief over broken homes. There's grief over cheating and fraud and swindling. But it all reaches hard. And there are other people that have been through it. There was something greater that had to be protected than just Mike Lowe being able to see Allison. There are things bigger than you and me, even in the most severe grief that there is. He turned around and went back. It was the only thing he could do. Well, you've heard the story of 9/11. I blame the hijackers. I don't understand what makes somebody do what those people did. But there's more to it than that. The reality is that American Airlines and airport security people and the FBI made some major errors that made that possible. Just human error. Maybe not so much of it in policy. Today, if you go through an airport security check, you're not allowed to take a pocket knife on an airplane. And given how many ex-Navy SEALs and how many air marshals I've sat beside on flights, I wouldn't want to try to tackle anybody on one with just a pocket knife. But you're forbidden to do it. You have to take your shoes off. We didn't have to do that before. But and I don't know what other policy changes, but there were human errors that took place. People made misjudgments at American Airlines that let this happen, slip through the net. Mike found that out. Some of the first people at his home were representatives from American Airlines. I guess every major corporation in the United States today has some kind of a care team that if there's a disaster, they send to try to help people out. 50 years ago, it wasn't that way, but we've learned a lot about what makes how to use, should I say, the skills of life with one another. In our case, the skills of salvation. So they sent their representatives. Two of them came to Mike's home. And he reacted by like you or I might. I don't want to talk to you. I don't need you. We'll handle this ourselves. But they didn't just go away. Sometimes when people are in grief and they're not thinking well, they need somebody else to help reach past. They weren't offensive. They weren't demanding. But they said, Mr. Lowe, would you just let us explain to you what we can do for you? Because we're trying to help you. He said, there are going to be other funeral arrangements to be made. You're going to be called on to go to other funerals because there are a lot of people besides just your daughter who lost their lives in this. We'll get flights for you. We will help with the arrangements. We will have some of our people there at every event that you go to. We'll give you advice on how to work with the media. Finally, grudgingly, He opened the door a little bit. How important that was. Because it would have been so easy for him to begin to get bitter and resentful at American Airlines because of the errors they had made that led to this, had they not shown him the kind of attitude that they did. Folks, when you meet these kind of circumstances in life, you're going to get a scar out of it. But how big that scar is and how well it heals depends an awfully lot on what's going on inside of you, but even more on what the people who love you do to try to reach past it and help you. It's so easy. If you'd have been one of those representatives and you went into Mr. Lowe's home and he started talking to you roughly, "Get out of my house. I don't ever want to see another pair of American Airlines wings." It'd be so easy to get offended at it. But they looked past the words that he was saying to the pain it was coming from and realizing what they could do to help him. And folks, we need to do that one to another. Ephesians said, "Be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, loving one another." Everybody you know is capable, in the right circumstance, of saying something they will regret later. Don't judge me by every foolish word that I say, please. I know the Lord counts my words, and I come to Him and ask Him to help Him with them. But sometimes I say things I shouldn't, and sometimes I get misunderstood about what I do say. But we need one another, folks. So American Airlines stepped in, and they helped him every step of the way. And in the end, Mike Lowe said, "These are some of my dearest friends." Never mind that he still has a lawsuit pending against American Airlines. They didn't allow that to stop him. They stayed with him the whole time. They still today are supporting him in what he's doing and his wife over the loss that he had. That's what love is, part of it. My topic has to do with the dimensions of love. So let me talk about where we went from there. There were funerals, and the whole world reached out to try to help him. And people that you wouldn't have expected tried to help him. How do you know how to calculate the worth of a word fitly spoken in a time of sorrow such as this? I'll give you an illustration. At some time after, there was a service in Dallas. For the passengers on that flight, I guess for Sarah Lowe as well, and, of course, Mike was there, and other people were there. There was no casket. There's nothing left to bury. But it was a memorial service, and they had the kinds of things that you do at a time like that, pictures and mementos and set on a table or something. All the American Airlines people, when they came to any of these functions, always came wearing their uniforms. Captains, flight attendants, everybody who was there. Some days they were despised. Some days they were vilified. Some days they were respected. But the point was the same. We are part of this. This is a reality. This is what we were. And we're not trying to run from it. And we're not trying to glorify it. But she was one of us. And we relate. One of those flight attendants walked by and just made a little innocent gesture, probably meaning nothing by it, but between her and Sarah Lowe. But she took her wings off her uniform and laid them up there with all the other tokens. And Mike was standing there and he saw that. I'm talking about little things that we might do for one another in a time like that and what a difference they can make. So after the people had passed by and he had a chance, he walked up to her and he said, "Could I have those wings? I'd like to have that." And so she gave him permission. But it's not the end of the story. There was a colonel there in the military, on the verge of retirement, old enough, served his time. He walked over to Mike and he said, "Could I have those?" He went and reenlisted. He asked for duty in Afghanistan. Now, I'm not a fan of the military. I'm a conscientious objector. But in my life, I've learned to respect anybody who moves from motives of sincerity. I appreciate what the military do. They have protected our country. Sometimes people speak so slightingly. For instance, we believe in divine physical healing. I do. But I don't put down on doctors. Doctors are important in our world. And I know there are doctors who are frauds. There are also people who profess to be saints who are frauds. But what they try to do is important. Our world would be a vastly worse place if we didn't have them. So also the military. I think this man was sincere in what he did. I think what he did was love for country, because he didn't want something like this to happen to your daughter or mine. He said, could I have those wings? And he went and asked his commanding officer, could I extend my tour of duty? I want to go to Afghanistan. He commanded a squadron of Apache attack helicopters. And he got his squad crews together, his air crew, and he told them the story of Sarah Lowe. And he said, I have the wings that that flight attendant laid down there that day. And they said, when we go on missions, can we take those with us? And they flew 151 missions carrying those wings. Each, those wings went on 151 missions, and they recorded everywhere they went with those wings and what they did when they were there. And when they were done, they made a plaque of it, recording all of that. Little things that people do. None of that brings Sarah back. But it means something to Mike and Bobby. It means something to New York City. The city of New York City asked to have those wings when it came back to the United States. They were returned to the flight attendant who got them, but they all got a plaque that listed all those missions that were flown. The deepest comfort comes from the Lord. But there are things we humans can do to comfort one another. In our hour of greatest sorrow, we need one another, folks. And just as surely as I need you when I am in my deep sorrow, so I need to be alert to what your need is when your time of deep sorrow comes as well. So that's one of the little things that people have done to try to be a blessing to Mike and Bobby Lowe and to their daughter Allison. Well, they've also created a web page. People who knew her but weren't able to attend the funeral services, people who'd never heard of her until 9/11, have gotten in contact through that web page, posted things there. People need to talk when they're in sorrow. That gave Mike an opportunity to tell the world some of how he felt. I found that. It'd be too much if I read it to you. My daughter Sarah was fun-loving and heartwarming. She was the best daughter that you could have. She was my baby. You see, grief is a common denominator among us all. We're all capable of feeling it for people even that we never met. I love my daughter so much, I still do. She is the love of my life. I love her. I've lost her, but my daughter is a hero of 9/11. She is one of the many true heroes of that day. On 9/11/01, that day, she left a call in the answering machine. She said, hi, Dad, it's me, Sarah. I just want to tell you that I love you. Please tell the family I love them, too. And then, too, she said that she was on Flight 12, not Flight 11. But three times she said, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then she said goodbye. And then she hung up. I love my daughter very much. I know one day I'll see her again. I know I will. Love your daddy. So you see, being able to say that helped Mike Lowe. And for the world to hear it. But let me read you two or three of the others. I know that's painful. And maybe that's not what you came to meeting for, but it's part of life. Sarah was my cousin, this one says. We had not seen each other in a while before the tragedy of 9/11. But I remember that day. I suppose we all do. She said it was as if time stood still when I got the call from my mom that Sarah was on one of those planes. I have some fond memories of Sarah. She was a few years older than me, so I always looked up to her and Allison. I think of Sarah so often, and I always think of Aunt Bobby and Uncle Mike and Allison. I pray for you guys always. Sarah is with you always. She will always be in your hearts as she is in mine. I have to say, she was an amazing person. Her life was one that I envied. She lived such an exciting life. I always admired how she lived in Boston and worked as a flight attendant. She got to live her dream. I'm proud she was my cousin. I hate that we had not seen each other in so long before 9/11. I'll always remember her. I'll always love her. She's a hero. The family goes back and reads that. Here's my point. Funerals are important. Reaching out to people when they're in sorrow is important. These are not eloquent speakers. Then none of these would win a Nobel Prize for literature. But their words mean a lot to this family. They mean something even to you and me. We can do that for one another. When folks are in trouble, they need our help. And we're wise to follow the pattern that others have made. It's really not so hard just to tell what they meant to us, how we love them. If nothing else, just to be there. Some people are just absolutely tongue-tied at a time of sorrow. But I tell you, from many years' experience, it is a comfort to a family to be at a funeral for someone they're having to say goodbye to for the final time in this world and look out and see here's a host of people that have come to support us in an hour of need. When I was young, I didn't care much for weddings or funerals. I didn't like dressing up and I didn't like being in crowds. But as the years have gone by, just like Mike had to learn when that tower told him to go back and land or he'd be shot down, I've learned there are things bigger than my feelings. There are times when people need us. There are times when it's worth putting on our dress clothes and driving 400 miles to help somebody in their hour of need. These things mean a lot to Mike, and that's why they're still available. Oh, and one more. 5 years does not lessen our thoughts, has not dried our tears. Your American Airlines family loves you. And are grateful to you always. And a signed jet set girl. But it wasn't the end of it. Of course, the funerals were over. The state of American Airlines has done everything that it could to help, including paying for DNA testing on remains that were found in the tower. They found several that they identified. DNA testing is expensive, but they paid for it. They found several parts just a couple of years ago, clear at ground level when they were clearing it, found something else, and did the DNA test. They're still paying for it. Called up, said, here's some more of your daughter down here. Remember Zacharias Massawi? Zacharias Massawi was the one terrorist who didn't go. He got caught. He was tried in Denver. Well, what would you expect? Mike Lowe went there every day. He said, we were not allowed to get close to that man. We couldn't say anything to him. But he said, one time during the trial, I locked eyes with him. And can you imagine what he put in those eyes? I don't suppose Mike Lowe is saved in the sense that we would understand it. But his indication are he tried to communicate to that man. I'm the one you offended. It'd be a different deal if you stood up man to man with me. And we had this out. There is retribution. But he said, Zacharias Massawi never showed any sign of remorse or sorrow. Every indication that he saw was defiance and hostility. That could get away from the fact he left the courtroom saying, I'll fly out of here on first class American Airlines and go where I want to go. And he was determined if he could do anything else, he would gladly kill someone else. Well, folks, there's that to deal with in life, too. There are some awful people in this world. There are people in the world who will not be affected if we show them kindness or forgiveness, who will take advantage of every opportunity of that sort. All this can do to Mike Lowe is deal an enduring wound unless he can forgive. Forgiving is an important part of grief. People disappoint you in life. People do things that cause other people to be killed. If you're a woman and your husband is killed, you're left with two or three little children to raise and no significant income coming in, you're going to suffer for that every day for as long as they live. And maybe the first day you forgive and maybe the second day you forgive, but 15 years down the road and the long, wearying struggle still going on, and every day without you, nobody's coming home, nobody is going to bring more money, nobody shoulders the load of correcting and managing and instructing these children. It wears down on a person. We need the grace of God. And we need the support of those who are around us and those who love us. And there are people who will take advantage of that and hurt us worse if they can. I don't know how people live through it without the grace of God. So, one of Sarah's schoolmates lives still today in Batesville, Arkansas, established a scholarship in her name. She has a little school herself. And here's what she wrote about it. Since she was friends with Sarah from the age of 4 on up. She said, when I went through all my old albums at my parents' house, Sarah was just in every picture at all of my birthday parties. I picked out every one that I had with the two of us in it. She said, I really meant this as a gift for her parents. What a thoughtful thing to do. Have you ever thought about doing something? You can't call that person back, but you can give the people who are sorrowing some sharing with them. I mean, as if she would say to Bobby Lowe, I realize it was different for you than me. That was your daughter. That was my friend. Our perspectives were different, but I loved her too, and this is what we shared together. And remember again some of the happy times. Because it's better to love and lose than to never love. And if that's true, then it's an advantage to go back and enjoy some of the happy times together, even after the sad times have come. So she made an album, and she gave it to Mike and Bobby and kept a copy for herself. And then she established a scholarship. In this girl's arm, you can't do anything for Sarah anymore, but she doesn't need anything. What we can do is help one another, and the Lord wants us to. I have two more scriptures to read to you. At the few more comments before we do. At the bombing of the Murrah building, Oklahoma City, numbers of people came to help. I say to my shame, for my profession, for my career, that many of them were ministers. And after the first two or three efforts by ministers, the authorities started to turn them away because they were doing more harm than good. Because they would tell people who had just lost a child, well, it was God's will. And people would say, how in the world could a loving God think it's good to deprive me of all a lifetime of my little child? Or somebody who was seriously wounded, injured, to say, maybe, well, God permitted this. Or to say things like, you need closure on this part of your life. Mike Lowe said, there's no closure. It's a wound that never goes away. You just have to learn to live with it. There are things in life that we have to learn to live with. Let me explain to you that these gray heads that you're seeing around you, if they have any happiness in their lives, it is because they have learned to live with what's happening. But it's there. Mike Lowe, when he speaks of that still today, and he has given hundreds of lectures on it, he still tears up. He says it's as if it happened yesterday. It's as vivid to him as it can be. We sing a song sometimes that says, other friends may bless and comfort, speak a kind and cheering word. That's what we try to do. But the balm to heal a heartache, only Jesus can afford. And that's what folks need who are in that kind of place. Because you see, time, this girl told, this cousin told Allison, Bobby, and Mike, time seemed to stand still that day, but it doesn't. It doesn't. It keeps going on. Sarah's gone, but Mike still has a business to run. The ones we love are gone, perhaps, or something has happened to them, but you can't, it doesn't do any good to try to stop your life then, too, and build a shrine to them. We need one another to help us rebuild our lives when times like that occur. Mike Lowe's life has taken a different direction since then, and so might yours and mine, following something of the source. He travels around the country lecturing on, I haven't been to one of his lectures, but he travels around the country talking about what happened to him, and also he's actively involved in doing something to keep such a tragedy from ever happening again. Why? Because he doesn't want you and me to go through what he went through. He used to spend his time flying to Colorado to ski and things of that sort. Now he spends that same time trying to help protect you and me. But folks, the Lord wants us to be that way with our lives. There's an awfully lot in the Bible about helping other people, those who are in need. Remember the story of the Good Samaritan? We wouldn't do that today. If you drove by somebody who was beat up and laying out on the highway, The first thing you would do as a sensible person is get your cell phone out and call 911. And it would be very unwise for you to get over there and try to put him up on a donkey or something. 911 would fly a helicopter in there and they'd get him and take him. But the principle remains the same. And 911 can't cure the emotional scars. We humans can do that for one another. Two more scriptures. Who hath believed our report? One of the children quoted it this morning. To whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? Paul said it this way, that we may comfort others with the comfort wherewith we ourselves are comforted. He shall grow up before him as a tender plant and as a root out of a dry ground, and so forth. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. We hid, as it were, our faces from him. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God. My comment here is, this is what the Lord did. He was a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. He bore our sorrows. I'd like to walk in his footsteps. That is surely what he wants you and me to do too. Bear one another's griefs. We're in a world full of grief. We're in a world full of joy. In a world full of blessing. We're also in a world full of grief. The Lord came to bear my griefs. It's appropriate for me, having the Spirit of Christ, to want to bear somebody else's and do what I can to help them. And then in Isaiah 50 and verse 4, I mentioned earlier that I guess most major companies in the United States have a plan for such a disaster. We are not organized that way, of course. We have something that we can use if we will. Isaiah wrote, "The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary." I think the Lord wants our worship services to be full of learning how to speak a word in season. Not something that hurts somebody worse, even though well-intentioned. How to touch the real pain. One of the best that I've ever had was Gene Porter. On the occasion of my mother's funeral, he came to me and put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "There'll come a point in this service when you feel like you can't take it." And he said, "I've been through it, and I want to tell you, God will be there to help you with that." And I found that to be true. And that's the kind of thing we can give to one another when we have been there ourselves, the tongue of the learned, that we may know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. Folks, it's a world of sorrow, but it's not a world without God. The Lord knows how to bless us and help us. He knows how to give us what we need when we are in sorrow. And he knows how to give us what we need to help our brethren who are in sorrow. I've read these things to you, talked before about the techniques, but I'm reading to you, talking to you this morning about how they were applied and what people have done. They made a tremendous difference to this family. They have helped to give them the will to go on and face life. And so they can, that's why that information is available, because it was so valuable to them. That's what we can do as well for one another. God bless us, everyone. Lord, help us in the things we have to face in life, to love one another dearly, to do all we can in sincerity to help one another in our times of deepest disappointment. Think of a song. Let us ever love each other with a heart that's warm and true, ever doing to our brother as to us we'd have him do. Kind and loving to each other, gentle words to all we need.
Attention. Amen.